Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
Alan Kay said, "The best way to predict the future is to invent it." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who invents his future. Today's Playmaker provides virtual CFO services. With us today is a managing director with over 40 years of financial and consulting experience. This great Playmaker is Steve Cook. Steve is managing director of VCFO, provider of outsourced and consultative CFO-level finance support to more than 3,500 clients nationwide. With more than 40 years of financial and consulting experience, Steve has 18-plus years as a president and CEO of finance and IT consulting firms, and 18 years as a practicing CFO focusing on small and mid-sized businesses in industries such as energy, insurance, real estate, consulting, and manufacturing. Now, started in Austin, VCFO provides an integrated suite of finance, human resources, technology, and recruiting support, including outsourcing and consulting solutions. Founded in 1996, VCFO pioneered the concept of the virtual CFO with its original core offering of fractional or part-time CFO solutions. Most recently, Steve served as president of Cook CFOs, a well-known accounting outsourcing firm in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that provided CFOs and COOs to small and mid-sized businesses. Cook CFOs then merged with VCFO in January 2016. With all that, Steve, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Well, you graduated from Claremont McKenna College with a BA degree in economics and political science. Your first job was at Touche Ross. Why accounting?
Well, I actually had always planned on going into politics. I actually planned on going to law school. I was actually accepted to Harvard Law School. But I had paid my way through school, had to pay off a bunch of bills, decided to take a year off, defer my acceptance. I went to Touche, found out I was good at accounting and enjoyed it, and I also saw a bunch of starving lawyers and a bunch of bored lawyers, and I just decided that I would stick to accounting and finance, which I was good at.
What did Touche Ross see in you based on accounting? Because your background was poli-sci and economics. Did you have any background prior to that in accounting?
Yes, I had plenty of accounting courses as part of the economics curriculum. I had everything I needed to sit for the CPA exam.
You work with companies to really develop long-term, sustainable, profitable businesses. How do you go about doing that? How do you understand what kind of CFO to put into that company?
Well, it's interesting. There, you know, are several questions that are buried in that. One is, how do I work with companies? And then the second is, how do I determine what kind of a CFO? And I will frequently have people ask me, what does a CFO do?
That's a good start.
And by the way, I mean, when people ask me what I am, I tell them, or what I do, I tell them I am a CFO. That is pure and simple what I am. I am a CPA, but I am first and foremost a CFO. And one of the comments, or three of the comments that I'll make to folks about what does a good CFO do, I use three buzz phrases. Number one, the goal of numbers is action. The problem with a bunch of accountants is we put together a bunch of, oh my, that's interesting reports. I hate, oh my, that's interesting reports. I don't want my report to sit up on a bookshelf and never be looked at again. So the goal of numbers is action. My job, our job as CFOs, is to turn the numbers into things that people can take actions from. That's actually the second buzz phrase that I'll use, is our job is to turn numbers into issues. If you're the CEO, your job is to manage the issues. My job as the CFO is to tell you what issues to focus on. And then the last comment that I'll make is, and this is kind of self-evident, but the goal of a good CFO is no surprises.
Now, when you're working with companies, do you bring CFOs into the company, and or do you work with those CFOs?
And the answer to both of those is yes. So part of my job, a significant part of my job, is basically I'm just a matchmaker. So I identify a situation, I identify the pain points, I identify the needs, and then within my stable of consulting CFOs that we have, or controllers, I determine who's the right level, who's got the right industry experience, who's got the right personality match, because that's equally important.
I've worked with a number of companies over the last few years, and I've found that many entrepreneurs start a company, they become CEO, but a point comes where they really don't know what they're doing financially. And many have not brought somebody, and maybe just an accountant, maybe a CPA, but it sounds like you hit them when they need to have that person to get them to that next level. Would that be correct?
And yes, and I will go into folks, and there are times where we will do special project work, but what I really like to do is to find a business that has reached a point where it needs to do some of the more sophisticated stuff associated with finance and accounting, but it's not quite at a point yet where it can afford a full-time CFO. And let me make a comment. I mean, one of the things I love to do with new CEOs or growing businesses is I'll focus on a concept of a disciplined management process. That is one of the things I forgot when I was talking about the goal of a CFO. The role of a CFO is to be the custodian of the management process in the company. Now, some people hate that because they consider that bureaucratic, but a good CEO appreciates the concept of a disciplined management process. And you might be interested or entertained by the very first question I ask every client I go into as part of that management process.
Which is?
And I smile as I say this because I would tell people, you know, everybody hires consultants over time. And I would tell you, if you ever hire a consultant and the consultant doesn't ask this question as the first question, you really ought to rethink that consultant. And the first question I will ask any client is, why are you in business? And I will tell them, I don't want a mission statement answer. That is a personal question. You are taking a bunch of risk. You're going through a bunch of headaches. You're doing it to accomplish something personal. And what is it? And your answer is your answer. It's not my answer. And I can give you several situations of the diametrically different types of answers I will get.
I'll bet.
And how that makes a difference in how you approach that business.
And you're helping them fulfill what that answer is.
That is exactly correct. So that is the start of the management process, is to define why they are in business. And again, you should not start the rest of the management process until you've done that.
My question then is, and I think I know the answer, but I'll ask you. You work with different types of companies, possibly companies that have never thought about having a CFO. They're now looking at having somebody. And even to the other extreme is a company that is now failing, possibly, and they need to do something. Do you work both extremes and the middle of that, too?
I work both those extremes. I work the middle, and I work the sides. I mean, I'll use examples of businesses where I've worked with them for 10 years. I helped them sell out to a larger business wherein they became the division of that large business, and I still work with them as basically the divisional CFO of that large business. So it gets back to this concept of a sustainable process and a sustainable relationship. Hopefully, over time, we've added enough value in our relationship that we can do that. Now, with that said, I will tell clients that one of my goals is to work myself out of a job. So either I mentor somebody to take myself over, or I help you grow enough that you can afford a full-time CFO.
So are you putting people on site, or do they just work with the company as needed?
Both. I'm sorry. The answer is both. My preference is to find clients where they are on site. And again, I talk about sustainable clients. When I'm talking to a client, I literally will tell that client, I want somebody in your office every week. Because I don't want to wait for you to pick up the phone and call me because you have a problem. Because 9 times out of 10, if I'd had somebody on site, we could have headed off that problem.
In other words, you want to be proactive rather than reactive.
That's correct. Now, we may spend half our time on site, and we may spend half our time working virtual remote CFOs. So we can do either.
Well, let's say I'm running a business, and I'm getting to the point where I might want to get out. Do you help them turn around that business or turn over that business to somebody else and sell it?
The interesting concept is a lot of times when I ask people, why are you in business, they struggle with coming up with that answer. So the way I will help them is I may ask them a second question, which is, when do you plan on exiting the business and how? Now, I smile because I had one client tell me, I am never going to exit my business. I love doing what I'm doing. I'm going to do it forever. I leaned forward in my chair. I looked at him. raised my eyebrows and said, I guarantee you, you will exit the business someday. And what I talk to clients about is the importance of planning for exiting the business at least 3 years before you really want to exit. So again, that gets back to the management process. That's part of the management process, is thinking about exit and planning for exit.
My guest talking about that aspect of it, that very, very few CEOs have thought about leaving the business.
And that is very, very correct, and especially if they are both CEOs and the majority owner. And one of the key elements which we could spend a little time talking about for CEOs is the concept of institutionalizing the business. That's a key word that I use. And what I will tell them is, when we talk about value and how you get value and the value multiple that people will attach to your business when you sell it, one of the drivers in value multiple is the business institutionalized? Can it survive the loss or the turnover of its key owner? If it can't, your value multiple goes down. If it can, if it's institutionalized, both because you've got a good management process in place that stands on its own, and you've got heir apparents to the CEO, then all of a sudden you have a true business that can truly be sold, that will stand on its own, and the value multiple goes up.
Then what is the difference between market value of a business and investment value?
Market value of the business is what a willing buyer will pay to a willing seller. And there are so many variables involved in that. The investment value, I'll be frank, I have not had that question asked to me, and the distinction I would probably make is the investment value is simply what you would put on the books as something that you would show to a bank or something. But to me, the concept of an investment value is an academic, esoteric concept. The real concept is, what is the market value?
You're talking about working with many of these CEOs that really have a development exit strategy, leaving their business. Are you primarily working with private or public companies, or a combination of both?
I would say probably 80 to 90% of our work is with private companies. There will be occasions, and we have the staff, that we can work with publicly traded company. We can do SOX compliance work. We can do assist them with acquisitions and divestitures that they're going to have to merge in. But most of our work will be with private company.
Then it sounds like you do different types of work, short term for a project, or long range where you stay with them to really be their CFO.
And that is exactly correct. I mean, we've had people call us in to help with an acquisition or a divestiture. Once we got it done, we were done. All of the clients that I still handle personally, I have had for more than 5 years. And I am in their office at least a half a day every week.
I know a number of companies that are continuing to look for other companies to purchase and add to their portfolio that complement what they're doing. So if I'm a CEO about to purchase a company, would you be the one to call to come in and help me identify and work through that process?
And again, I hate to sound cocky, or I don't want to, but the answer is absolutely yes. I have, and I speak not for myself, but also only for myself, but I also speak for the stable of consultants that we have. All of us have done acquisitions and divestitures. I personally have probably done more than 50. And the largest one that I was a lead negotiator on was, we sold for $770 million. And I've done $300,000 acquisitions. I've done buys and I've done sales. And by the way, they are completely different roles. When you are buying, it's just like buying a house. You want to take one approach. And when you are selling, you want to take an entirely different approach. So when a CEO thinks about doing that, he needs to look for somebody that is not just an academic consultant, but who will be an advocate for him on the right side of the table, whichever side of the table he's on.
Well, let's talk about, because you mentioned your people, are they specialists? Do you have certain people that can go into a certain type of company based on what that need is?
The answer is, I have specialists, but I would tend to say most of my consultants are what I will call industry agnostic. I have walked into clients, and again, you think about my background of 40 years of doing this, but I've walked into clients that will look at me and say, but we're special. Have you ever handled somebody like us? I used the example of the oil and gas client where I walked in and they said, have you ever done oil and gas? And I looked up at the ceiling and said, well, I think I did it when I was 23 years old. And then I looked back down at him and I said, but please understand, Finance is a finance. Accounting is accounting. The concepts are the same. I've handled so many systems, we can handle it. You know, it is what it is. And I would say most of my consultants, I would be very comfortable putting them into almost any situation.
We're speaking with Steve Cook. Steve is managing director of VCFO for North Texas. VCFO was started 1996, I believe. You started your company, Cook CFO, in 1998. So we're looking at almost 20 years. Prior to that, was there anybody doing what you were doing, or was this a new concept that developed in the 90s?
There were a couple of companies out there. I won't mention their names at this particular point, but there were a couple of good companies that did it, but not anywhere near the number of companies that are doing it today. It is a much more competitive marketplace than it was back then. When I announced my resignation from my then very large company that I was the chief financial officer for, I made a conscious decision. I wanted to start a business that focused on small business. I was tired of the corporate muckety-mucks. I actually had been a corporate muckety-muck, so I can say that. And I just wanted to focus on real salt-of-the-earth small business guys. I did the research, and at that time, there weren't a lot of companies that did it, so maybe one or two at the time.
Apparently, there's been a need for a long time, and by the 90s it hit. Has the internet, has software, have virtual companies, has that changed what you've done over the last 19 years?
I think it's changed it in two ways. I think it has made the market and CEOs and the clients more receptive to the concept. Everybody's just familiar with the concept of virtual services. And so I think many more people are open to it. I take calls from across the nation, and I handle clients from across the nation. On the other side of the fence, I think it has caused a number of clients to think I can do it myself because I can use tools that are available on the internet, and I'll use those tools rather than using a real body or a real mind. And we all know that there are some inherent dangers in taking that approach.
Well, when you work with clients, you mention some of them and you ask them the question, why are you in business? When you meet with them, are they running that business, or is that business running them?
Well, it gets back to the concept of discipline management process. If they don't have a management process in place, then 9 times out of 10, the business is running them. And frequently, that's why they've called us in. It either may have been because they're just smart enough to realize that, or it may be because they have reached a crisis and the crisis has forced them to realize that. It all gets back to this concept of management process. I would encourage anybody listening to the program as a CEO, my number one question is, do you have a management process in place? If you have any questions on what that means, that's obviously something that we could provide other resources for. We have some podcasts on our website that deal with that. But it is a self-reflective question that I believe every CEO should ask.
It's interesting that successful businesses do have systems and processes in place throughout the organization. But I've been amazed at the number of relatively successful businesses that don't have those systems and processes in place. And I would think that when an entrepreneur starts a business, they are focused on keeping that business going, cash flow, for instance. But a point comes where that becomes a lot more complicated. When would you suggest you get involved with that business? At what point in their lifeline would it be the obvious time for you to work with them?
I'll respond to that in two ways. The first one is obvious. If you have cash surprises that are occurring and you don't know where your cash position is and you keep getting surprised, then it's time to get somebody in to help you. There's just no reason, I don't care what your situation is, there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to predict your cash position far enough out in advance, whether it's good or bad, that you're not surprised. So that is the first thing. And the second thing I would do is I actually kind of evaluate potential clients more based upon the number of employees than I do on the revenue. When you start getting above 20 employees, then you start needing to divide your company into accountability centers. You need to start setting up some compensation programs that reward people for performance and incentivize them to the same behaviors you have as an owner. And that's the point in time at which your accounting and your management statements start to become more complicated. I've had some very large companies that only had 10 employees. And, you know, they were just doing a lot of throughput, but they could basically manage that company still from the seat of their pants. I've had some fairly companies that are fairly small in terms of revenue that had 100 employees. And they really needed to go through this concept of accountability centers, turning it into turning the numbers into pieces that could be managed.
Well, you've now been with VCFO almost exactly 1 year. Has your business, has your life changed anything from leaving your own business, Cook CFO, to VCFO?
The answer is yes.
In what way?
And the biggest way is becoming the managing director of a bigger company with a bigger territory has forced me to be more sociable. And that's hard for me. I'm an accountant. I don't have any personality. And so going out and just meeting folks and being out there and trying to keep our company top of mind is an exercise in and of itself that I didn't have to do.
Well, VCFO did a good job by taking one of their main competition in North Texas and bringing them into the fold. But how large is VCFO? What cities are they in?
We have offices in Denver, Austin, Houston, and Dallas. We have clients in a number of other places. We have over 70 consultants and over 100 employees. I can't keep track because it's a constantly moving target.
So the question now, did you bring many of your people into the fold with VCFO?
Yes, I brought a number of my consultants in that continue to manage clients, and then I obviously merged all of my clients into VCFO.
Well, should somebody want to know more about VCFO, what should they do?
Well, I would do the number one thing is I just go to the VCFO.com. And you can look at our website. You can monitor some of our podcasts. We have blogs. You can submit a question via blog, and we can respond. The second thing that I would just encourage is just give me a call. I will tell you, and even as I've gone through this conversation, hopefully I've come across as just chatting. I will come out and be happy to chat on any issue, not a hard sell. I just simply, and by the way, believe it or not, I consider part of what I do to be a kind of a mission, which is provide people with good financial services. I have a very strong vision for what needs to be done, and I'm happy to just come out and chat.
Well, Steve, thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
I have thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you.
Well, you are definitely a playmaker, and thank you very much for being on the show. Thanks also to all of you for listening and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com. We can get all of our replays and past episodes. That's PlaymakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.